This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show number 158. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com. You can call us on
020-88-167-691.
And you can email us on
coach@pitchvision.com.
My name is David Hinchliffe, and this week I'm joined by Mark Garraway and Berners. So we're stretching off our hamstrings again for another week after having a little rest last week and having the interview only for 1 week. But we're back at full strength. So hello, Berners. Hello, Gareth. How's it going?
Yeah, good. Thank you, mate. Yourself?
Berners, you're not traversing the world this week?
No, on home soil. Just doing the job, coach. Just doing the job.
Taking a few names.
And I'm at home. I'm at home as well for a change as well. I was darting around all over the place last week, so it's good to be back sitting on the sofa.
You're on Easter break, aren't you?
Yeah. We had a cricket tour at the back end of last week, and then for the first part of the week, I was out with Super Skills Travel again, working with Michael Vaughan, Alex Stewart, Paul Nixon, and Will Greenwood, which was a good experience.
Any of us had a chance to watch any IPL games? I watched a few over the last week or so, and there have been some crackers already.
Yeah, it's either a cracker or a dud, isn't it, at the moment? Yeah. You know, there's nothing in between. There hasn't been a game which has sort of ebbed and flowed particularly without, you know, going to the last ball or to the last over. And there's been some really good viewing, as long as you choose your matches well.
There's been some good run chases as well. A couple of them nearly, they've got 200 odd, haven't they, a couple of times?
Yeah, I mean, some of them have been at Bangalore, which I have to say, if I was chasing a big score in any format of the game, I think Bangalore would be one of my venues that you'd look to do that at. And it was the venue of the venue where Ireland chased down that big score against England in the World Cup, and also England obviously tied that game with India in the World Cup as well. It's a good surface, and the ball just seems to travel there, and. It's not always the greatest place to bowl, but there's been some really good run chases. And again, you know, I can see it moving the game on into expectations of what you can get off of the last 10 or last 20 overs of any format of the game.
Well, it's interesting because you're speaking about good batting pitches. And there was an article this week comparing what's happening in the IPL to what's happened in English football when all the money... all the television money came into English football in the early 90s, and this argument is saying that the equivalent of English football's long ball game, where you pump the ball up to the opposition penalty box and muscle it into the back of the net, is what's happening with the IPL, where you have batsmen with big bats smacking it for six, but they don't know how to play with any skill or deftness when it comes to playing longer formats of the game. What do you think about that, Gareth?
Yeah, I read it as well, and it's an interesting article. I think things go in cycles, mate, to be brutally honest with you. And you look at the Premier League football over here sort of 7 or 8 years ago, and it was dominated by big towering players. You know, your Vieiras, that people were trying to clone a Vieira-type player to play in midfield and have the skill that he had, but also to have... you know, big range in his strides to be able to put himself around. And the game's changed again, hasn't it? I mean, we see now midfields lined up. You look at Swansea City, a classic example. They haven't got anybody over about 5 for 8 in their midfield, yet they're able to pass the ball around, and things do go in cycles. So I read it from that perspective, and I think the IPL will go in cycles as well. And, you know, there have been games which have been dominated by people muscling the ball over the rope. But also, you see that bowlers in particular have to adapt and develop new skills. And then as a result of that happening, the batters will have to do it. The same thing happened in Test cricket, you know, with how people play spin in Test cricket, because we had Warne and Muralitharan, who were causing all sorts of problems all around the world. And then batters had to adapt. And whatever the challenges that are placed in front of cricketers or footballers, you find a way around it. And so it's very much a cyclical thing. I thought the interesting bit of the article was about how behaviours have changed in players. And there's definitely been a shift in Premiership football away from the old-fashioned footballer that maybe played in the first division a few years ago, you know, where they had a great affinity with the crowds. And maybe that's happening a little bit in India. I mean, you know, I can't really tell that from a distance, but another thing I'll add to that is that I felt that the young generation of Indian cricketer in 2005, which is pre IPL, was also a little bit distant from its supporters as well, whereas you had the likes of Rahul Dravid and VVS Laxman and some of the older timers that were in that side that still had that affinity with the crowds, would still do things in a normal fashion. And then the new lot that came off the block, which was the likes of Shree Samth and the likes of the left-hander Suresh Raina and people like that, just conducting themselves in a slightly different way. I don't know whether that's culture or whether that's the IPL, because those guys were demonstrating that type of behaviour, Harbhajans and people like that, long before the IPL came on board. So I thought it was an interesting article, but one you can pick holes at.
Do you think it's a cliche, Bernd, to say that the Premier League's all about, and the IPL is all about muscle in the different sports, and it's a bit more complicated than that?
Essentially, yeah. I mean, they're getting the best players in the world, aren't they? So they tend to go for the more kind of flamboyant players. But I think there is a little bit more kind of strategy in the overall scheme of things. I mean, I think that they often have to weigh off the commercial merits of all their decision making as well, don't they? So not necessarily always getting the right guy, you know, for the actual job in hand, when maybe he might just be a good bench warmer but sells a load of shirts and it's good to have his association with a certain team. But they're both different genres of entertainment, aren't they, really, which are aiming to please a cross-section of fans from all around the world rather than just locally.
Well, it's interesting to see. I mean, you got Ajinkya Rahane is top run scorer in the tournament at the moment, the Rajasthan Royals player. And he wouldn't be deemed as somebody who's a smash and grab player at all. He's somebody who's actually impressed me and impressed on the Indian one day tour last year, playing pretty correct cricket. And I think what he's learned to do is play spin a little bit better than he had done in the past, because there's a lot of spinners bowling in the first three overs of a 2020 game. But I think he's got 260 runs at the moment in IPL, which is a pretty good effort. But you wouldn't necessarily say he was from the Chris Gayle or the Kieran Powell and Kieran Pollard type guys. No. You'd say he was more akin to a normal Indian batter that we've seen down the years, the Manjurakers and those sort of guys that can just stroke the ball around, and the Dravids rather than the big hitters.
I think it's I think I agree with you, Gareth, as well. I think that it's a bit of a spin saying that the IPL doesn't help breed test cricketers. A bit of a spin on the old argument that says, you know, in the olden days when the 40-over league started in England, that it's going to stop people being able to play test cricket. When in fact, what happens a lot of the times is the really good players are flexible enough to play in any format. So in fact, you know, they're going to be more flexible than players who were playing years ago when there was only one format to choose from, because they have to be. But let's move on with the show. We have our yes no round to wrap up our little introduction. Berners, you've got the questions this week, so we're back to yes or no this week. And Berners, you've got the three questions, and we'll all give our answers for those as quick as possible.
Okay. First question, throwdowns are better than bowling machines?
Yes.
Yes.
Laptop coaching makes for better cricketers?
Yep.
No.
IPL is better than county cricket?
Yes.
No.
So now on the show for our weekly interview, and this week it's Mumbai calling. I've got the chief executive of Cricket India Academy, Martin Gleeson, with me, who's a level three Australian coach who's found himself in Mumbai doing some coaching at the Cricket India Academy. How are you, Martin?
Very well, thanks, Dave. Very well.
So tell us a bit about your role at the Cricket India Academy.
I've been here for just over 2 years now, and Cricket India Academy was established in late 2009 as a to run school education programs using cricket as the vehicle, meaning coaching not just skill development, but also developing leadership and teamwork and other aspects of sport, with cricket being that main focus. We have the cricket education program in affiliation with Cricket Australia, which is a six-level syllabus-based training program, which tries to bring together the Australian coaching philosophies and methodologies and marrying that with some of the Indian talent and Indian knowledge to hopefully produce better coaches, which then can ultimately produce better cricketers.
Of course, we have the IPL going on at the moment, and that's been the big thing in the last few years in India. So how has the IPL influenced the players at the academy?
It's an interesting question in the sense that I think it's introduced cricket here, particularly at a junior level, in two main areas. The first is in a career prospect. Kids are now looking at IPL as a genuine career opportunity. Obviously, there's more IPL contracts up for grabs than there are places in the Indian team. So it can be seen perhaps as a bit of a shortcut to a career. And the other side of it, I guess, is in terms of the playing style and the way that kids are viewing and consuming cricket. And in some ways, it's very positive in that there's a positiveness around the way they play. Although if you wanted to look at it, take a slightly negative viewpoint, you could suggest that kids now are walking out to bat at 9 years of age and trying to play ramp shots and reverse sweeps and switch hits and then bowling six different slow balls in an over, and all the really funky stuff without necessarily mastering the basics first.
So does it change the way you coach, that change in attitude? Does it change the way that you approach coaching a player with that kind of attitude?
I think it does. I think coaching's still evolving in 2020 in the sense that particularly older coaches that perhaps haven't played a lot of high-level competitive cricket in the last 10 years, they were playing when 2020 wasn't really much of a format. So it's an interesting analogy for some of our coaches to adapt to being able to coach kids in a format of the game that they haven't necessarily played a lot of themselves. But the important thing I think to remember and something that we focus very strongly on is regardless of what the format of cricket, whether it's Test cricket or IPL or 2020 or whatever, that the basics of the game remain the same. So you still need to build a sound foundation and then to be able to develop a really strong decision-making process in kids so that they can actually learn how to hit balls into different parts of the ground and bowl different types of balls, but building that with a strong foundation first.
How much does technology help you with that, and how much has it come into your coaching in the last few years?
Firstly, technology, I think, makes the game more accessible in a viewing sense, in that it's available wherever you are. In a coaching sense, it also means that we can now watch cricket from all around the world in different formats, different playing conditions, different weather conditions, different pitch conditions. So it makes it much more viewer friendly for kids to be able to see lots of different variations. In terms of a coaching sense, we probably use it a lot more in a coach education sense than we do in a coaching. We do a little bit of basic video analysis, particularly with our more talented kids, but in a we use it a lot for our coach education of teaching coaches and using things like pitch maps and being able to use slow-mo and some of the analysis software to assist our coaches become better at what they do.
And I suppose a big challenge for coaches, as we've been talking about before, is to have players who are playing in different formats and having to become much more adaptable than in the past when they had one format or two formats to play, but now they have to think about the long game, the multi-day games, and they have to think about games that are all done and dusted in a few hours. So how do you coach a player to be adaptable?
Cricket, I think particularly at the top level, is as much about decision-making as it is about skill. And to give a, we play a lot of gameplay scenarios with our kids. We teach them the basic fundamentals and the basic skill development principles, but then the children need to be able to adapt. So we create game scenarios, we play modified rules that make children think and make them problem solve, because ultimately that's what the modern game is about. And a great example happened in the IPL game the other night, just with Harbhajan Singh batting. While he was batting at number 9, he hit 3 fours in 3 balls from balls that all pitched roughly about the same place, and he hit one to backward point. The second one he flat batted through mid on, and the third one he hit through cover. So the adaptability of the next level of cricketer, or the next generation of cricketer, has to be able to do lots of different things from a basic fundamental, and that really comes from having a confidence in your own ability, but also having a really strong decision-making process to be able to make the right decisions at the right times.
There'll certainly be people listening to this who are ambitious young cricketers themselves, or maybe they coach ambitious young cricketers, and they'll want to know what it's like at an academy like Cricket India Academy. So what is a day like for somebody who's participating in the academy?
In some ways, it probably depends on the time of year. In particularly if you look at it from a Mumbai perspective, it's summertime now, so it's very hot. We have a summer camp program which runs every day during the summer period, or 5 days a week during the summer period, and sessions then are a couple of hours in the morning, and then children are off free for the rest of the day. During school times, our sessions are either before school or after school. So a typical day might be school during the day, and then coming to training afterwards, where over the course of a 6 or 8 week period, we're putting the kids through a number of their different skill levels, teaching them the different components of the game, but then also having weekend matches. We've now started doing tours. We have an elite camp for some of our better kids where we do a bit more high performance stuff with them. And then when monsoon comes from, say, mid-June to about mid-September, all of our sessions go indoors, which means that any work that we do is essentially fitness-related work, or it's a little bit of basic preparation stuff, because it's physically too wet to be able to do stuff outside.
Well, Martin, thanks very much for your time today. It's an interesting insight into a top academy in India. So hopefully you'll be able to get a bit more training in before that rain finally arrives. Thanks for your time today.
No worries. Thanks, David. Much appreciated.
Okay, time now for your questions to be answered on the show. And of course, every week we pick a couple of questions from the mailbag. We read them out, we answer them, and we choose the best question of the week to win a prize, which is an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. So, Berners, you've got the questions this week. Go ahead.
First question's in from Hisham, and he's got a bit of a memory problem. It looks like he forgets how to play cricket, so he's been injured a couple of times. Gets back in the nets and he gets cricket altogether. So just wants a couple of tips about how he can not only, you know, remember how to play cricket, but also maybe some motivational tips to get back into the swing of things once he's been injured.
I would say there's a few things you could do. I mean, we've all been there probably. No matter how much you've paid, sometimes you think, I really don't know how to play this game at all, especially if you have a run of bad form or something like that. It's all about not making too many assumptions about what's happening based on limited information. You know, you don't assume that you've forgotten how to play because you've played a couple of bad shots or something like that. If you work hard and you train in the right way, you can get results. Everybody can. It doesn't matter where you start. So don't make any assumptions that you've forgotten how to play or anything like that. And then make sure that you are rewarding yourself for doing things right. So, I mean, it can be something as simple as you know, promising yourself that you're going to buy yourself something if you train for a certain number of sessions or something like that. That's external, you can do that, or internally you can do it. You can think back to the times when you did some training, you played well, and you felt good about it. And that's, you know, reminding yourself internally of the good times helps as well. And the final thing I'd say probably is don't forget to get the support of as many people as you can, because nobody can improve and do well on their own. They need support. I'm not just talking about coaching. You know, they need people to say, come on, when you're going through a hard time. And you know, if you've got friends and family and people like that who can help you through those times and give you a kick, then when you're feeling bad, then that's going to help you.
So it's massively important when you are when you go into the nets after a layoff that you reconnect. And we've talked about this on this show a heap of times, but reconnect with your previous best performances. And everybody's had them, yet we tend to dismiss the best performances and really major our memory and our minds on the things that haven't gone so well. So take yourself back to those good performances. If you've done it once, then you can do it again. The body doesn't just forget things. It's a bit like riding a bike. If you have a 10-year layoff from riding a bike and you sit on a bike, you don't just fall off. The feet pedal, you know, you get your momentum up, you steer around corners, and nobody forgets that. And a cover drive is exactly the same, and the same as a bowling action. And it's been really interesting for me working this week when I've been away in Sardinia, and we've had Alex Stewart with us. And Alec hasn't played any cricket for a long time yet. If you ask him to hit a ball or you ask him to bowl a ball, it just clicks straight back in. So he hasn't done it for 10 years. It's not a case of just having a layoff and being out the nets for a little bit of while, which this person talks about. So reconnect with your best stuff. Have a really good image. We've talked about associating into that image so you can smell what was going on at the time. You see what's going on. You recreate your thoughts in your head and you recreate those feelings in your body. And that's a really good way of getting back into things. And you can do that away from the net situation. And the fact is as well is that sometimes, you know, it doesn't go swimmingly when you first go back in, and it can be tough. But that's exactly the same as any other game of cricket. And we need to have some really realistic expectations on what we're trying to do when we go in. If we've bowled at 90 miles an hour before an injury, it's not necessarily realistic to expect us just to pitch up and bowl at 90 mile an hour now. And then we have to adapt our game. And you see it with bowlers so much. Dennis Lilly became a better bowler when he slowed himself down a little bit, and he had to adapt to the things that happened in his injury to make himself into a better bowler. So he went down in pace, but actually increased his skill level. So, you know, you've done it before, but if it isn't coming out quite right, you might need to adapt your game a little bit. And that's never a bad thing to do. Lots of players have done it in the past in all manner of sports. And if you can adapt your game to accommodate those injuries that you've picked up, you can still become an even more effective cricketer by doing things with more skill.
Yes, it's as much about how you handle those difficult times as it is about how quickly you pick up skills and how well you do things, isn't it, Gareth?
Absolutely. And just being away this week, we were having a chat, myself, Alec and Paul Nixon. And I can't remember whether it was Alec or Paul. Paul Nixon was talking to a sergeant major in the army who was talking about recruitment and selection processes. We talk about selection a lot on this show. And one of his criteria for selecting somebody is if somebody's never failed in their life, he won't select them. Because it's about failing and learning from those failures. So if somebody's coasted through life, then it could be that the first time that they're forced with a really difficult situation comes in battle. And if they've not failed and learned from experiences in the past, you know, if one of their comrades goes down and he has to react, he probably won't be able to do it properly. So he always chooses people that have had a history of having some form of failure and then bouncing back in their lives. And you know, I think it's so important to be able to understand that injuries come along, loss of form comes along, but it doesn't mean to say that they have to last forever. Kevin Peterson talks about it in his course on a regular basis, you know, and he's lived through it this winter. and come through and played absolutely brilliant cricket in the last 3 months or so, but without the experience and without the realistic attitude and way of weighing things up, he wouldn't have been able to score those runs in Gaul and make a match-winning contribution.
Next question's from Paul, and he's coaching an under-12 team, and he's got one boy who's got an excellent technique. He's well-balanced, looks good during training in the nets. However, last season he didn't get on so well. He's failed a number of times, and he just wants a bit of advice, really, as to how he can get on a little bit better when he starts his innings and how he could structure his innings a little bit better. He says here things like maybe setting a number of runs in the first number of overs. So a little bit of goal setting, which I know we've covered in past shows. But what do you reckon, guys?
This goes really to it's an individual thing. And I would encourage the coach, Paul, I think his name is in this case, to ask lots of questions. And it's easy for us to impart our knowledge or what we think is happening, but sometimes that isn't necessarily what's happening. So the kid in question is obviously a well-balanced player. He's obviously got a good technique, so it's not a technical issue and it's not a balance issue that's affecting the way that he played last year. So there must be something else going on, and the only way we find those out is to ask lots of open questions and get the child, the player, to talk. And it's one of the things that I don't see coaches doing so much. We always want to come up with solutions straight away, whereas our solution might not actually be meeting the need of that player. And the best way to do it is to ask open questions. It could be, for example, that the young player in question, because he's done well in the past, puts himself or has external pressures putting himself under pressure. So it's a different strategy that you'd put in place as if it was his cut shot or his drive shot not working properly. So ask lots of questions, find out what the root cause is, and I talk about that all the time. And if it is something external, it is something that's going in his head, then put a strategy around him that's going to help. You know, we can put things in like how many runs you score in the first 20 balls and all of that stuff, but that actually might not be the issue. So my encouragement would be twofold. Ask lots of questions, open questions to get the lad talking, and that lad will give you the answer if you listen properly. And secondly, get some video of that lad playing, because his image in his head might not be the image that is actually on show every time he plays. So Paul's mentioned that he's a well-balanced and a good technical player. Maybe that lad's self-image inside his head doesn't actually look like that to him. And if that's the case, then you need to show him some video, and then all of a sudden that might unlock something as well. So that would be my answer.
Well, that's a brilliant answer, Gareth, isn't it? Is a good answer in one way, in that it's the right answer to give, but also I know there'll be people listening to this going, well, hang on a minute, can't you just give me a drill? So what I'm going to do is I am going to give him a drill that he can do, but bearing in mind everything previously that Gareth said, it's that it may be completely the wrong thing, but it's quite a nice drill to do anyway, and it's just a way to get a player thinking about any particular point in an innings while they're batting in the nets, which is just allocating scores to particular ways of playing. So, for example, if you want him to play in a certain way early on in his innings, for example, leaving balls outside off stump and playing as straight as possible, then you can set up a game for him to play in the nets while he's facing the bowlers, to say, right, you know, every time I leave the ball, I get two runs. Every time I hit the ball straight in the V, it doesn't matter how hard I hit it, if I just drive it straight in the V, you know, I'll count that as four. And if I play a shot which is too far outside the off stump, you know, I'm driving at one, my elbow's dropping or whatever, then I'm going to count that as resetting my score. You can set up the game any way you like, and then get him to, whatever the rules are, get him to keep score in his head, or get somebody to keep score, and you can help develop a mindset then when you're batting in nets, rather than what often happens in nets is that you just kind of mindlessly play and then you have a little slog at the end and that's the end of your 10 minutes. So that's a nice little game to play no matter what the situation is, I think. Time now for our weekly soapbox rant. This week it's the turn of Mark Garraway. So Gareth, what's your soapbox this week?
You've got lots of people around you that have many different experiences from yourself, and there's great opportunities every time that we're at a game of cricket or at a practice session or whatever to learn from those opportunities. I spent a lot of time with the England team who didn't necessarily always learn off of each other, but then we started to encourage them to talk to each other. We started to pair them up as batters. So we had a top order batter and a lower order batter working together, and that brought a lot of runs in our lower order, which was fantastic. But last week I was working alongside the likes of Alex Stewart and Paul Nixon and Michael Vaughan, and all I did all week was ask questions, and I learned heck of a lot of Stewie about how he changed from being just a batter to being a wicketkeeper batter, and that nugget of advice that he gave me there may come in handy whenever I'm working with somebody at school or within county cricket or within international cricket in the future. So always ask questions and use the people around you to develop yourself.
Okay, that's the end of the show for this week. But before we go, we have a prize to give away, which is the best part of the show for me. The prize, of course, is an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. Online coaching videos, ebooks, all that kind of thing available at pitchvision.com/academy. So, Gareth, we have two questions this week. One from Paul, one from Hisham. Which one did you prefer?
I like Paul's question because I think that happens a lot. It certainly happens at school a lot, where a player who is a good player suddenly goes through a season where it doesn't quite work for him. And I think it was a good question. And between us, I reckon we answered it pretty well. So Paul's one wins today.
Congratulations, Paul. And you can claim your prize from us. If you want to send in a question, if you're listening to this or anything, oh, I fancy a prize. I fancy getting that burning question, coaching question I've always had answered at the same time. Then you can do so by sending in your question to us on the usual offices, which, Berners, do you have there?
020-88-167-691 is the phone number. You can email us as well at coach@pitchvision.com.
Our Twitter is PV Cricket Coach, and we're on Facebook. Facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy. If you want to listen to the show every week, you can do so by subscribing in iTunes. Do a search for Pitch Vision Academy and click on subscribe to get that every week. And if you don't want to use iTunes, you want to use something else, head over to pitchvision.com/academy, click on the podcast link in the green bar at the top, and you can find the RSS feed, which is updated every week at the same time as iTunes. That's all then for this week. But before we finally finish off, we've got the tail ender. And Berners, it's over to you for your tail ender glossary item this week.
Well, living and playing in London, everyone's familiar in the UK with the Underground Line, and we often refer to a player going down the Bakerloo, which refers to him playing down completely the wrong line of the ball and jumping on the Bakerloo line. So, Bakerloo, kids. Remember that one in the West Country, Gareth.
No undergrounds this end of the world, mate.
We're going to have to find one for an Indian subway, because that's the only way it's going to catch on if we get millions and millions.
A few metro stations going up in and around the big cities in India. And I'm sure Southwest Trains, you know, playing down the Southwest Trains line down there on my babber.
It will be. It will be. Like, it would be Great Western Railway, wouldn't it?
Great Western.
And on that bombshell, that's all for this week. See you, Birders. See you, Gareth.
Cheers, coach. Guys.